Unit 5 school buses have been running late the first few weeks of school. They're doing better, but still need to improve. And pandemic relief money will help McLean County government move ahead on technology, roads, and other long-running projects. Those stories just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. A Bloomington mom fought for months to have her son correctly diagnosed with a rare disease.
We really need to take more time to listen to these parents and not just have a 5-minute appointment and then try to push you out the door so you can get to your next patient.
She says doctors need to be more receptive. And Heartland Theater resumes live performances with the classic comedy Tartuffe about a sanctimonious scoundrel and a wealthy, pious, gullible guy. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Students in the Unit 5 school district have been getting to school late at times. It's a not uncommon complaint at the start of every school year. First Student, the contractor who administers busing, says things are better now than they were several weeks ago. But Area General Manager Chris Coyle says they continue to struggle to recruit, retain, and train drivers.
It's a challenge that we always are up against. However, with the unpredictability and unprecedented times with COVID, it makes it even a bigger challenge.
Frame that, would you? How much more of a challenge this year than in a regular year?
It's not a question of necessarily are you short. It's, you know, with the COVID protocols that are also impacting, you know, when we've got to put people on quarantine, either they're close contact or... The other thing that you got, if folks are just not comfortable in interacting because of COVID concerns, then, you know, we've certainly have seen some challenge there where people have not willing to take that chance.
How much has that been articulated by drivers that say, you know, I'm afraid?
Yeah, there's a fair amount. Yeah, absolutely. And there's others that, I mean, because this is a private issue that they may not have shared. They've just taken the request of being a leave of absence. It's definitely not an easy situation for all parties involved.
With all those unique and common factors pre-pandemic and during the pandemic, what is the difference in bodies and in capacity this year?
It's a nationwide shortage. Our area fluctuates just like anything because my driver availability really is impacted by a lot of factors on that. We continue to recruit, train, and get folks in the door. So that hasn't stopped. And for students offering $20 an hour for start rate, $2,000 sign-on bonus, you know, and we would encourage anybody that's looking for a job that really can impact, you know, students and really help out us with our partner, Unit 5. We'd love to have good, solid candidates to step up.
What were you offering before the pandemic that's now up to $20 an hour?
Oh, it's been 20 for a couple of years.
Are you going to have to raise it? Many jurisdictions in many states are having to raise the pay for bus drivers to even have a hope of meeting their needs.
We're always looking at potentially what we can do to help bridge that gap and see what the challenges are.
You mentioned one of the episodic challenges is drivers who end up having to quarantine. How many, how often, what's the percentage of people who cycle in and out because of that reason over the first few weeks of the school year?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, hard numbers, it fluctuates so much. It's a dynamic situation. But I think putting in perspective of who our drivers are, you know, we come from all walks of life. We've got parents that utilize a ride-along program so they can bring their smaller children with them and relieve the need for daycare at that standpoint. We also have got parents that have students, you know, children that are in class and in school that may be exposed, so that would in turn kind of take them out of the mix because they've got to provide care. Trying to nail down a number, it's just all over the board just because of whether that's individually or close contact, or they're showing symptoms.
If all your dreams about labor force adequacy were fulfilled, how many bodies would you have, and how many do you currently have?
We've got enough drivers to cover routes, and so that's the start point where we're at now. Unfortunately, we don't have the flexibility when a driver calls off, and obviously we as an employer care about their safety as well as other folks' safety at the location and the students. We really don't want people that are in a situation where they're showing symptoms to come to work. The good thing is we do have drivers above what we need for routes. The fluctuation, if I had it again, the dynamic nature of it, I could have, you know, I could be at 110% of my staffing level, and that still may not be enough. At times it will be. Again, it ranges all over the place. We've had zero people out, zero employees out for COVID, where we've had, you know, five or six or something like that. So, you know, I don't know the specific numbers to kind of give you an idea. But, again, it is a dynamic situation that really puts us in a situation that we've got to pull out all the stops and work on resolutions to get the students home safely in a timely manner.
At the start of school, there were numerous parental complaints that some kids were arriving up to an hour and 20 minutes late for school. What's your current on-time record?
I can tell you this, that we have improved roughly about 10% over the previous week. So that's a dynamic number that we're working on. It's not anywhere where we want to be. The good thing is we're making progress. So, you know, our goal we're shooting for is 95%. That's the goal that we as a corporation are. And so we're making strides to do that. We're not there yet.
What are you at?
We're fluctuating just like any given day. Probably we're right in the upper 80s right now.
Chris Coyle is the area manager for First Student, which runs busing for the Unit 5 school district. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. McLean County government plans to grow its budget 25% next year, in part because of American Rescue Plan funding that offsets the pandemic's economic toll. County Interim Administrator Cassie Taylor tells Eric Stock the county plans to spend much of that federal money on health and safety, new election equipment, and a new electronic justice information system. But Taylor says highway funding will also see a boost next year.
The greatest change that people will see when they look at the budget will be the direct service and attention that we've given to our infrastructure and to our health-related departments. And so we were very pleased that with the lost revenue amounts that were calculated through the American Rescue Plan Act funds, we are able to get to some of the projects that we haven't been able to before and work on our aging infrastructure.
Can you give some examples of some of the things that have been priorities that you're just now able to get to?
Kamala Park. We've received resident and park enthusiasts who have given us feedback that our roads at the park are in bad shape, lots of potholes. And so some of the parking lots and roads that we haven't been able to prioritize before will now see some attention. We are also looking at some new buildings. We are anticipating a new bait shop, boat rental shop out at the Kumlara Park. We have looked into strategizing how to put together a new animal control shelter facility. We have set aside plans for improvements at the old courthouse museum, including elevators, as well as elevators in our government center and law and justice center.
McLean County is getting over $33 million to be spread out over the next several years, 10.3 included in the budget this year. How did you approach the budget this year to help account for about $7 million in lost revenue just from last year and then addressing long-term needs in the future?
We took the approach of looking at our most immediate prioritized or dire needs that we were receiving feedback from either county board members, our department heads, or elected officials that things that we just really needed to pay attention to right now. We had meetings with each and every department head and asked them to put together their wish list or their prioritized list of what would they anticipate that they would need in the next 3 or 4 years, and also what would be those priority needs. We plan to take that to our oversight committees next month to get approval for those priorities. And then long term, we plan to take this back to the county board and ask for further input from the community, looking to how we will spend the remainder of those funds.
That's a different conversation than administration usually has with department heads this time of year, right? It's what can you give back?
Usually they dread their budget meetings because we're looking at what kind of a percentage cut we're asking them to make in supplies and services. And so many of them will joke with us that, oh, it was only a 2% cut this year as opposed to a 4% cut. When they brought to us their priority needs and had their wish lists and saw some of those realized in our budget, I think they'll be very happy with the next year.
The tax levy proposed of $38.2 million, about a 3.5% increase, but the rate expected to stay the same, though it's a marginal increase. Is that overly ambitious to assume growth of about a 3%?
I think this is a tax rate that will support these funds, and I don't think it's overly ambitious. We rely on our assessor's office, Bob Common, to give us these rates, and we feel that the way we've allocated these funds will reflect what is borne out in 2022.
And the budget calls for salary increases for non-union staff of 1.5%, merit increases being reinstated, and the county, as you said, is going through a salary study. What was the impetus for this, and is there concern that county staff is underpaid, overpaid?
Well, I think one of the reasons that we looked at including this in the budget for 2022 was really our feedback that we received from our county board members and department heads. We had several budget amendments through the last couple of years with critical hire needs or requests for a starting salary outside of our policy. And so with that, we had feedback from county board members that perhaps we needed to look to see how we were sitting in relation to market norms.
That's McLean County Interim Administrator Cassie Taylor with Eric Stock. Along with American Rescue Plan funding, the county also projects an additional $1.5 million in sales tax money from online shoppers. The county also has received more than $300,000 in sales at Bloomington Normal's 2 cannabis dispensaries. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Lexi Reardon is a mom on a mission. Her son Axel suffers from metachromatic leukodystrophy, or MLD. When Reardon began to notice symptoms around Axel's second birthday, her concerns were dismissed by a string of doctors. By the time he was finally diagnosed, the disease had progressed too far for Axel to be included in a clinical trial that might have improved his prognosis. Reardon says when parents suspect something may be wrong with their child, they shouldn't have to battle doctors to find out what.
You're trying to work with your own emotions and feelings, and then it's like having to go out there and still fight. You're fighting every day to keep going for your child, and now you're going to have to fight with medical professionals. That's just ridiculous to me.
And so you had to fight for months to finally get this diagnosis of MLD, this incredibly rare genetic disease. How has it affected your son?
Over the last year, Axel has lost the ability to walk and crawl, sit unassisted, roll over. He's not able to eat on his own. He's strictly G-tube fed. He can't support, you know, his own head. He can't hold on to things unless, like, we place it into his hands. His hands are usually, like, fisted. So if we put something that, like, a rattle or something like that in his hand, he can hold it. But for the most part, he is completely dependent on us in that way. And then research shows that once you get your diagnosis, and once the onset of like symptoms start, most MLD kids with late infantile only have like 3 to 5 years after that. And so that's why we were really hoping for a clinical trial or anything to slow this down. Unfortunately, that's not the case for us.
So you're on a mission to spread awareness about MLD, but it also seems like there's a need to raise awareness among parents that sometimes you have to really get in there and advocate for yourselves and your kids. And it's part of this kind of motivated by the experience that you had in not being able to get the doctors to listen to you.
Absolutely. I think that has changed my whole outlook on parenting. Like before all this, I was very laid back about that kind of stuff. We don't go in to see the doctor for a little cough or anything like that. But now it's like, you know, if you just think one thing is off, and I tell a lot of my friends who are just now having kids and stuff like that, and I tell them if they feel like one little thing is off, go to your doctor. If they blow you off, go find another doctor. Like, don't just take this one doctor's word because they've been a doctor for what, 30, 40 years. I mean, they don't know everything as much as we'd like to believe that they do. If you feel like something is not right, then you need to go to whatever length to get to the bottom of it, because there is so much that is unknown with, especially these genetic diseases. We never saw this coming.
So now you're well over a year into this odyssey of trying to diagnose and treat Axel's MLD. What are your takeaways? What do you think that the medical industry and the insurance industry need to be doing differently?
There is so many changes that could be made to make things a little bit easier. I know, especially with dealing with Illinois Medicaid, everything is a battle. Like, there's not one simple thing that has happened dealing with them, whether it is covering the cost of medications he needs so he's not in like this terrible amount of pain 24/7. They give us a hard time for that. They give us a hard time for what doctors we want to see because we are going out of state. However, there are no in-state doctors that have even a little bit of knowledge about this disease. And doctors, I mean, I'm sure they see all sorts of people and probably some moms who are a little too crazy, like over concerned that something is wrong. But a lot of the times, you know, you don't know, you're not the parent, you're not around them every day. So I feel like they really need to take more time to listen to these parents who have concerns and not just have a 5-minute appointment and then try to push you out the door so you can get to your next patient.
Lexi Reardon says her son Axel finds a lot of joy in his therapy pony. In addition to raising awareness for MLD, Reardon says she'd like to open a therapy farm for kids. She spoke with Sarah Nardi. Sound Ideas, I'm Charlie Schlenker. A con man wraps himself in the mantle of the Holy Church and swindles a gullible guy out of all he owns, yet in the end gets his comeuppance. The classic comedy by Molière plays on the Heartland Theater stage in Normal for the next 3 weekends. Don LaCasse directs Tartuffe, which can be variously translated as The Hypocrite, The Imposter, or The Truffle. LaCasse says the play was so popular the word Tartuffe replaced earlier words for hypocrite in French, and it has lasted more than 400 years, rhyme scheme and iambic pentameter notwithstanding.
Because the same issues it was dealing with then, we continue to deal with today. It's an incredibly universal script in that way, plus some very fine characterizations.
Those issues are?
Hypocrisy is certainly one of the major ones, and the one that I think I've been attracted to more than the others. But there's also like gullibility. Pious is important. They talk about pious a lot. I've actually directed the show before. I did it probably about 30 years ago. We had an opportunity to do it here with Heartland, and while we were postponed for about a year and a half, we finally got the opportunity to do it. But it's always been one of my favorite plays, and to me, it really speaks to, I think, what this country has gone through over the past 7 to 10 years.
So you're setting it in the now instead of in the 1600s.
Right.
Whose ox is being gored here?
Not a specific individual, nor did Molière do that. Molière, he was not writing against the church. He was writing against religious hypocrisy. But the church at that time didn't see the difference. So that's one reason why it was banned. And actually, Louis the 14th, he kind of liked it. But the opposition from the church was so great, and his mother, that they banned it. And at that time, it was done as part of a huge extravaganza. It was called the Pleasures of an Enchanted Isle. He said at that time it was uncompleted, but still it was banned. Then he did another version a couple years later. A couple years later after that, he changed some of the character names. Banned again.
Strike
finally,
two.
In 1669, it was approved. But a lot had changed in the Catholic Church at that time. And unfortunately, we don't have the three early versions. And it's a shame because we can't see really how he changed it.
Could it have been even sharper than it is?
That's, I think, one of the conclusions of some critics, is that, yeah, it probably was sharper. And I can imagine it could have been.
How do you situate it in this now? What are you doing?
We want to keep one foot in pretty much the contemporary world and one foot in the 17th century. Difficult balancing act. But because of the different things like the language of the play, being verse, it's not everyday conversation. And it lends that sense of being from another time. So we kind of keep a foot in there. We are, of course, doing contemporary costumes. The language itself, Richard Wilbur did the translation for this, and it's been the standard, really, since he did it around 1955, maybe. And he's a former poet laureate of the U.S. He's won several Pulitzer Prizes. I love that version, and it's just so alive, and it sparkles.
Well, that kind of leads to the next question, which is, you know, to everything there is a season. You know, some of Shakespeare's stuff shows signs of aging out. We kind of wince at Merchant of Venice nowadays and some other things. Pilgrim's Progress has fallen hard out of the canon. So how much more time does Molière have?
I think this play will survive, along with probably Misanthrope. Those two in particular. Doctor in Spite of Himself is kind of a cute little commedia piece that might still be produced. But I expect Tartuffe, particularly since its themes, which ring as much to a contemporary audience as they may have in the 17th century, I don't see human nature changing enough to change it. I just think people are going to see a lot of contemporary overtones in the play to things like fake news, the big lie, things of that type. And while this is not a political diatribe, it is a funny play. He doesn't go at any specific individual.
Don LaCasse directs the Heartland Theater play Tartuffe, about a sanctimonious scoundrel and a wealthy, pious, gullible guy. Tartuffe opens this weekend and plays for 3 weeks through October 2nd. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.